04, CV U.S. Risk Incorporated versus ISI Contracting Incorporated.
May it please the court, this case presents two different issues. Issue number one, may ISI assert a misrepresentation claim under Section 541.061 of the Insurance Code against U.S. Risk based on three statements that were not made to ISI, that were not made about ISI, and that ISI didn't find out about until 6 years and 4 years, respectively, after they were made? The answer to that question is no, it may not. The only person or entity that can assert a claim under 541.061 for misrepresentation is the party to whom the statement was made. The second issue in this case is whether ISI's failure to check the scope of Mr. Guerra's insurance coverage from March 2013 through November 2015, and its knowledge no later than 2015, as its former employee Kelly Parker said that Mr. Guerra did not have insurance, start the statute of limitations clock running and run it out. The answer to that question is yes. Each of these points independently mandates reversal of the decisions below and rendition and judgment in favor of U.S. Risk. The initial precipitating event for this case is a tragic accident on February 12th of 2015 involving two young women who went over a guardrail in Bexar County, Texas. But the events leading to that date are very important for the court's decision and are relevant to both of the issues that we present to you today. Right now, ISI makes a claim based on its Eighth Amended petition, which asserts only a claim under 541.061 of the Insurance Code for three misrepresentations, that alleged misrepresentations I'll talk about. I should add at this point that we certainly dispute that these are misrepresentations at all. But as you hear the argument of both parties, please keep in mind at all times that the injury on which ISI allegedly bases its claim is its lack of coverage under insurance policies issued by Scottsdale Insurance to Mr. Guerra, DBA Guerra Construction. Mr. Guerra had two businesses, RGR Industries, and he operated also as a sole proprietorship. I'll refer to him as the sole proprietorship as Mr. Guerra to make it easy. RGR had coverage for guardrail operations. Mr. Guerra did not. In January of 2013, Lucy Magillan of the Capped Insurance Agency, which was the retail agent for both of these entities, approached U.S. Risk, my client, to get liability insurance for Mr. Guerra. The application listed guardrail work as one of the things that Mr. Guerra did. During placement of that coverage, before a policy was issued, Jackie Baca of U.S. Risk told the Scottsdale underwriter in-house that the only work that Mr. Guerra would be doing was mowing right-of-ways for TxDOT. Ms. Filak, in turn, said to Ms. Baca, okay, issue a policy that excludes coverage for all of the activities except mowing right-of-ways, for TxDOT. And that was done. This, by the way, Ms. Baca's representation or statement is the first of the alleged misrepresentations on which ISI hangs its hat.
And counsel, you said that occurred in 2013?
Yes, ma'am. January of 2013. I anticipate that counsel for ISI will assert that Mr. Guerra wanted coverage for his guardrail operations for his sole proprietorship, and that therefore Ms. Baca's statement to the contrary was false. However, even if he did, there's nothing in the law that requires an insurance company to issue the coverage that someone wants. An insurer is free to accept or reject risks based on its own desires and instincts. Farmers Insurance Group versus Cheater, 620 Southwest 3rd, 702, the Appian Treatise at Section 4505. Be that as it may, with respect to Mr. Guerra's desire, U.S. Risk issued a quote, binder, and policy in early January of 2013, all of which excluded operational coverage for everything except mowing for TxDOT. They were all delivered. It was acknowledged by the GARA organization that they were delivered. There was never a challenge made to what was in the policies.
Counsel, was your client made aware that GARA required guardrail coverage between the contract with ISI and GARA? Like, was your client aware that they needed that coverage?
We're about to come to that very point, Your Honor, okay. Because the first policy period in January of 2013 predates the contract with ISI by 3 months. In March of 2013, Mr. GARA, through his sole proprietorship, executed a contract with ISI. That contract was open-ended and required him to make ISI an additional insured and to provide coverage for what he was doing for ISI, which was guardrail operations. GARA never asked his retail agent to make application to make ISI an additional insured. So it was never communicated to U.S. Risk that this was desired, to answer your question. U.S. Risk had nothing to do, frankly, with the policies until they came up for renewal. But the important point for your analysis is that ISI never asked to see the policy. It never asked to see the additional insured endorsement. It never asked to see what was covered under the policy. In fact, it never asked at any time prior to November of 2015. So ISI was in a position, by the exercise of due diligence, to know that there was a lack of coverage as early as March of 2013, because the 2013 policy was already in place. Policies renewed in January of 2014, same language, same terms. ISI, again, did not ask to see any of the policies or any of the information that was provided. In 2015, it's important to say what exactly happened, because we believe that ISI will argue that it could not have learned about the 2015 GARA policy in time to protect itself with respect to the February 12th, 2015 Markham accident. But the answer is that that's not true. On January 5th of 2015, 38 days before the accident, a quote came out for the 2015-2016 policy that showed that only mowing operations were covered. On January 9th of 2015, 35 days before the accident, binder was issued. No guardrail coverage, not an additional insured. January 16th of 2015, 28 days before the accident, a certificate of insurance not showing ISI to be an additional insured was issued. And on January 19th of 2015, the policy itself was issued. All of these are delivered from U.S. Risk to the agent. And how does ISI find out about it? ISI asks, except it didn't. The record shows that if ISI had done so, it would have seen the defects in the coverage, and it could have taken action at that time. But matters stay inactive until August of 2015, at which point a claim involving Danny Martinez is made. That involves an accident involving guardrail work on October 28, 2014. GARA, in both business capacities, and ISI tender the claim to Scottsdale. Scottsdale denies coverage, but during the period of time that happens, the other two alleged misrepresentations take place. On September 10th of 2015, Chris Roper of Scottsdale asks Jackie Baca if GARA, Mr. GARA, not RGR, but Mr. GARA, had coverage in place for guardrail work. She said no, which is an accurate statement of the policy. 4 days later, there is a second exchange in which is memorialized in one short email by Ms. Baca, which says, per our conversation, the insured GARA has duplicate coverage. Non-renewal notice will be issued. Now, a non-renewal notice does not affect the 2015-2016 policy, only the 2016-2017 policy, which they decided not to renew. So none of these is made to ISI. None of them is about ISI. And ISI doesn't find them until 2019 or later. And that brings us to the denials. Scottsdale denied coverage to ISI on the Martinez claim by a letter dated October 23, 2015, two grounds: not an additional insured, activity is not covered. November 10th, 2015, it's in the record at page 1486, ISI's first request to see the Guerra policy. On November 13th, 2015, and remember as you listen to these dates, ISI did not sue U.S. Risk until January 30 of 2019, well after the statute had run. ISI sends a letter from its lawyer to Scottsdale threatening to sue if coverage is not afforded to Scottsdale for the Martinez claim. But nothing is done. Kelly Parker, who was in charge of insurance for ISI at that point, testified that he took over responsibility to look at subcontractor insurance more carefully because in 2015, 2016-ish, after we discovered that Guerra didn't have insurance. Let me segue forward quickly because the Markham claim that brings us here did not get sent in until 2017, coverage denied, because not an additional insured, guardrail activity is not covered. Two legal points, let me talk about them quickly. No misrepresentation here. 541.061 makes it an offense to misrepresent an insurance policy. I anticipate that you will hear that that means to tell a false statement. We deny that these are false statements, but the statute does not say who the false statement is made to. That is empty and must be filled in. Now, the word misrepresent came to the code in 1972 for the first time. And at that point in time, it had an established meaning, as the Supreme Court said in Westcliff Co. versus Wald, which says that a person making a representation is only accountable for its truth to the person he seeks to influence. Now, that common law meaning has been the common law forever and a day. But to think about it, as Justice Scalia said, paraphrasing slightly, if a word is obviously transplanted from another legal source, whether the common law or other legislation, it brings the old soil with it. And the Texas Supreme Court has so held in Greer versus Franklin Life Insurance, in Via Metro Transit versus MEC, and multiple other cases. It did not redefine misrepresentation. So the common law meaning applies here. That's consistent with other statutory principles that are discussed in our brief. And it is also consistent with the idea that the purpose of a court is not to expand a remedy by rewriting a statute that the legislature has not included. Compare 541.061 with 541.052, which adds three words: to the public. If 541.061 has the meaning that they put on it, 541.052 is surplusage. There's no need for it. Turning to limitations briefly, HECI Exploration, the Vionet case cited in our briefing, both hold that due diligence does not include sitting on your hands. Failure to ask questions does not prevent the discovery rule from running. But more important than that, ISI had absolute knowledge, 100% knowledge of its injury, no later than November of 2015, but it did not act. And for that reason, the clock clicked on and it clicked off no later than November of 2017, at which point the statute of limitations ran. I see I've used my time. Unless you have questions, I appreciate the court's attention and reserve time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. ISI's claim is that Jackie Baca of U.S. Grisk got an application for a policy for GARA that would include guardrail coverage. If you look at clerk's record 1076, you'll see that application out of U.S. Grisk's file. They got the application, and Jackie Baca knowingly went and got a policy that did not include that. She told the underwriter that they had coverage for guardrail under another policy, and so she got a policy that didn't cover anything. It didn't. They didn't mow lawns for TxDOT. There's no. They did. Scottsdale did audits. It said that they did guardrail. And yes, they sent the policy to Nora Quintanilla at CAP, the retail broker, and she testified she didn't read it. She testified that she never knew that they didn't have guardrail coverage. This is the retail broker, and that's at 708 to 711 in the clerk's record. The fact is that this was a relatively small policy for a relatively small business. They had a lot of policies running through that, and people didn't read them. We got a certificate of insurance. It didn't have anything on it that saying that it was limited in any way. And
counsel, when were you made aware of that?
With the Martinez case, there was a response to a demand for coverage. And we got a letter that says, you don't have coverage. They don't have coverage at all for guardrail. And besides, they have coverage. There was coverage for them on some other policy.
And did that occur in November 2015, as counsel stated?
November 13, 2015, the letter that Justin Short for ISI wrote back to the carrier, 391 of the clerk's record. On behalf of Scottsdale, you denied providing the defense in this matter, stating that GARA's policy excluded all GARA's work except lawn mowing for TxDOT. You further represented to ISI that Scottsdale only insured GARA's RGR for guardrail. Both of those foregoing representations are incorrect and constitute a bad faith denial. The exclusion for all work except mowing for guardrail, such an exclusion would be standard to standard CGL policy language, and our skepticism is bolstered by the fact that you refused to provide a copy of GARA's CGL policy to confirm your representations. He very nicely said to Scottsdale, you're lying. Show me the policy. And they got back a letter that basically says, well, we continue to take the same position. If things change, we'll let you know. And then Scottsdale hired a lawyer, and the case went away. So, as Tim Herbert, the owner, testified, we assumed that this was not an issue, that it went away. And, I mean, the lawyer for ISI basically calls out Scottsdale and says, you want to show me I'm wrong? Send me the policy. And they didn't do it. So we assumed that this was their first offer. The letter says, this is our offer right now, this is our position right now. If we learn something in the future, we may change our mind. So the question is not whether as jurors you would think that, gee, we should have used something else would be reasonable efforts to get disclosure. The question is, should that question be posed to a jury? The situation is that the Martinez case went away. We didn't know anything about the Markham injury until they filed suit later, because their injury was much later. And the fact of the matter is that we did not know that there was no coverage until...
And counsel, in your contract, your client's contract with the Geta company, was there anything in the contract where Geta had to provide proof of insurance?
They provided proof of... The only thing that was required was proof of certificate of insurance. They provided the certificate of insurance, which is what they were required to do. They were not required to provide us the policy. And in fact, when we asked, when the Martinez question came up, we took the certificate of insurance and wrote to the retail agent, "You sent us the certificate of insurance. Can we see the policy?" Lucy Magillan asks asked Nora Quintanilla at Guerra, "Is it okay for me to give it to him?" And she says no. So in that time period, with respect to the Martinez claim, we asked, "Give us a copy of the policy." This doesn't, because very frankly, something that only covered mowing for TxDOT makes absolutely no sense. It doesn't cover anything. And so that was the question, is with respect to limitations, what does the statute say? When we discovered it, or when in the exercise of reasonable diligence, we would have discovered the unfair practice. Now, remember, the misrepresentation we're talking about, as he points out, we didn't know about the misrepresentation. So even if we had gotten a copy of the policy, we didn't find out until discovering this case how it got to be that silly policy. So when the legislature says in 541-162, person may bring an action, second anniversary, the date the person discovered or by the exercise of reasonable diligence should have discovered that the unfair method of competition or unfair deceptive act or practice occurred. And so there are three reasons limitations is not properly for summary judgment in this case. Number one, the injury we're complaining about is not that we didn't get insurance. The injury, the thing that cost us money, was when we got sued by Markham. If we had sued because we didn't get the right insurance, we wouldn't have had any claim. So first thing is, the injury does not happen until July of 2017. Second thing is, we, in the exercise of reasonable diligence, did not and should not, in the exercise of reasonable diligence, have discovered the problem with the insurance until 2017, because with the Martinez case, Scottsdale covered it. We thought we had insurance. There was a claim. They took care of it and bragged about it. And the third reason is, even if we had discovered the problem with the insurance, we did not discover the unfair or deceptive act or practice until discovery in this case. So limitations is not a proper subject for a summary judgment in this case. They may be able to convince a jury that they're right. But Tim Herbert says, and explains it well, we thought we had insurance. We had a certificate of insurance. This problem came up. They wrote us this letter, and at the end of the letter, they say, now, if something comes up, this is our position right now. If something comes up, we may change our mind. And then they cover it. He assumed it wasn't a problem. And by that time, the policy had expired, and Garrett no longer had any work, was not doing any work, guardrail work for ISI. So and very frankly, they got the insurance before they signed the contract, because they wouldn't have gotten the contract if they didn't have insurance. So that was part of the prerequisite for it. With respect to the argument that ISI cannot So With respect to the limitations issue, I think that is clearly a matter for the jury. It's not proper for summary judgment in any situation. The other issue they raise, and they talk about how the process happened and what Lucy Maguillan at the retail broker told Jackie Baca. There's a dispute about that because Lucy Maguillan never said they're not going to do guardrail coverage. They don't need guardrail coverage. And so, but that's not the issue. As he says, the question for summary judgment and the question on this appeal is if U.S. Risk made a misrepresentation and that misrepresentation caused damage to ISI, both of which are taken to be true in the summary judgment context, does somehow 541.061 have a loophole so that in the world where there is a wholesale broker that talks to the retail broker and the carrier, but never talks to the insured and never talks to anybody down the road, is there a world in which that person is immunized from coverage because they took advantage of the system, they played the system? Jackie Baca was probably pretty sure that when she issued the policy that nobody down the road was going to read it. And the fact of the matter is that when you look at the statute, when you read the words in the statute, 541 says, 061 says, it's an unfair method of competition or unfair deceptive act or practice to misrepresent an insurance policy. It doesn't say to a claimant. The previous provision says misrepresent to a claimant. Doesn't have that language. 052 talks about advertising. It's all about advertising. It says you advertise to the public. That doesn't mean that the legislature meant to incorporate that in here. Because basically, if you think about it, if you look at it, for the wholesale broker to knowingly undertake to gain advantage, financial advantage for the company, that for the wholesale broker, by making a misrepresentation, that's a deceptive act or practice. If you look at 541.001, the purpose of subchapter B is to prohibit unfair deceptive acts or practices. If you look at 541.003, it says they're prohibited. If you look at 541.002, it broadly defines person to include wholesale just brokers. It does not exclude wholesale brokers. And 541.008 says when construing this statute, it should be construed to promote those purposes. The idea that allowing something which is clearly an unfair practice is wrong. Mr. Aleman says, well, let's look at Westcliff versus Wall. It says misrepresent is always meant to a person. And in a sense, he's correct when you read the case, because it's talking about common law fraud. This is not common law fraud. This is something more. The legislature says we're going to regulate deceptive acts or practices in insurance. And cases say doesn't require privity, doesn't require reliance, and very specifically, reliance, which is typically required in fraud cases, the legislature very specifically says in 541.151, it authorizes an action for damages caused by somebody in the business of insurance, A, for violations of the provisions of subchapter B, which is 541, or violations of the DTPA if they relied on the statement. And so the legislature knew how to say that things that used to be the law under DTPA or under fraud, they're incorporated, but that doesn't mean other things are. And very simply, In this case, the fact is that as U.S. Grist starts off in its opening brief, Cadena Commercial, for example, Texas Supreme Court very clearly said, where the legislature used something in one part of a statute and doesn't use it in another part of a statute, you can't insert it. So with respect to the question, did the legislature write a law that excludes the situation in which a misrepresentation was made by somebody in the insurance chain and it in fact caused damage to somebody else? That's a violation of the insurance code, and the insurance code provides for the recovery of actual damages. And so that's why I included in my exhibits two documents, two statutes, because that's what this case is about. What does the statute say or not say? One thing I do want to comment about, because Mr. Aleman in his brief and today talks about what Kelly Parker said. Kelly Parker says, well, when we learned Gara didn't have any insurance, 2015, 2016-ish, and then he also said, when we learned Gara didn't have any insurance after the Markham case was filed in 2017, and this is the deposition of a former employee who was not employed at the time of his deposition and who was testifying about facts that occurred, I think, 4 or 5 years before. And Tim Herbert, the owner of the company, very specifically testified in his deposition about his consideration and why he didn't think that we learned that Gara actually had a problem because the Martinez case went away. And so, very simply, this case is about what does the statutes say?
Excuse me.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. There's about 3 minutes left. I don't expect you to answer it right away. I want you to kind of think about it while you're talking about other stuff. But your client did not have the policy?
No.
Would your position change if he had the physical, tangible property? Think about that and let me know. I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want you to think about that.
Would that be a summary judgment matter? I don't believe so. It would certainly be a fact that they could have said. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at this policy, this exclusion is on page 34 out of 50 policies. And the contract at issue had to do with repairing sections of guardrail over what turned out to be about a 2.5-year period in Bexar County. And so it's a very limited policy, and it may or may not have been read. So, and I don't have to keep think about while I'm still talking because I'm about to be finished. So very simply, the fact of the matter is that one of the biggest issues, let me just leave on this point, accepting their view of what the statute says, says that the legislature intended to provide a loophole for someone to whom the statement is not made, and who keeps it secret. This happened between the carrier and the wholesale broker. It could not have been more in the dark. And in fact, one of the things that makes it deceptive is because of that. And I think the legislature intended to deal with deceptive acts or practices. They 541.008 says, in construing it, it shall be construed liberally to promote that purpose. And I think that's the purpose the legislature had. If there are no further questions, Yes, sir.
The statements that you're referring to happened before the accident. So what motivation would they have had to misrepresent, to decrease what's covered? Wouldn't you charge more if there's more risk?
But Gara wasn't going to buy a more expensive policy.
Okay.
I believe that Jackie Baca, U.S. Grisk, worked to get a policy that she could get them to buy. And if she told the truth, they might get it someplace else. My time has expired. I thank you for your attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me begin my 5 minutes by saying that I can address each of the points that have just been made. I intend to focus on the high points in this response. Number one, individuals are charged with the knowledge of what's in an insurance policy the minute they receive it. That's the Wooten case, which is described in our brief. Whether or not they read it, the fact that in a commercial insurance policy an exclusion is toward the back does not excuse the failure to get the policy and read it from beginning to end. This is not about somebody's house being hit by a hailstorm. This is about a contract to conduct commercial activities for the state of Texas in Bexar County. Number two, we had a certificate, I heard. Look at Vionet versus TIG when the court considers its options. 211 Southwest 3rd, I believe it's 310. That's a certificate case, and it's very similar to this one. Company enters into a contract to provide services for another, has an additional insured requirement. They get a certificate of insurance. It says even on that one, it didn't on this one, it says even on that one, this company is an additional insured, but it's not. That company tried to skirt exercise of reasonable diligence by relying on the certificate. The Texas Supreme Court rejected that at page 314 of the Vionet opinion, stating people who do so at their own risk. And that's what this is about. Is Mr. Garrett's refusal to give a copy of the policy a red flag? Sure. Is a letter from Scottsdale Insurance saying there's no coverage a red flag? Sure. Is there a second letter from Scottsdale Insurance dated November 23rd, 2015, to which a response is not made a red flag? Sure. This business of a lawyer was sent and it was covered. Look at the reply brief and at the record at pages 254 and 446. Scottsdale issued two letters in the case of Martinez's claim. One was to Mr. Guerra on behalf of RGR, and it said, we will deal with you under a reservation of rights. As to Guerra Construction, got a separate letter from there that says, we deny coverage. You are not covered. We will not accept ISI's claim. Injury, we couldn't discover until 2017. Look at the Lazy R Ranch case that's cited in our brief. In that case, there were spills on ranch owners' property. Some of them on the ground came to light before the statute ran. There were then groundwater claims. The ranch owner defended the failure to file suit on the groundwater claims because they hadn't happened yet. Just exactly what is being said here. Texas Supreme Court rejected that argument, said you saw that there was an injury. You don't need to know the whole scope of that injury for the clock to start running. Here, by November of 2015, not a matter of whether there's coverage for Martinez, whether there's a coverage for Markham, there's no coverage. And that's the point. There's no coverage for anything. That's the injury. As a practical matter, as set forth in our reply brief, that could have been discovered in 2013. ISI's contract gave it the right to stop work if it got inadequate insurance coverage. That's in Mr. Parker's deposition of the clerk's record, I believe, at pages 1221 to 1225. But finally, in respect to that, what did ISI send back to defend the position that it was covered after the exchange in October and November? Nothing. ISI let the matter ride. Due diligence, as set forth in HECI, due diligence as set forth in Vianet, require more than sitting on your hands. Ultimately, it also requires not digging through a file years after the fact. I'm not defending Jackie Baca as I should, but Jackie Baca did none of this. These were business discussions, and as such, they were not misrepresentations. Your Honors, thank you for your attention. Unless you have questions, we appreciate the opportunity to be heard.
Counsel, quick question.
Yes, sir.
If there are disputed facts as to when ISI received the misrepresentation, do you think that should be submitted to the jury?
No, because there's no dispute as to when any of the three conversations happened. ISI has conceded in its briefing in this court and conceded below that it did not find out about the purported misrepresentations, the statements, until 2019. There's no causation attached to them. How did it change its position in reliance on statements it didn't see until we were litigating with it?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
This case will be under submission. Thank you.
Thank you.